Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green, and I have a great show planned for all of you today. My guest will be Chung Hwa Hung. She is the Executive Director of Grassroots International, and I am thrilled to have her here today. So honored that she's making time to join us on the Progressive Radio Network and tell us about what Grassroots International does. But before we get there, I first want to share some things going on in and around the news that you want to pay attention to. The Democratic candidates are all talking about health care, and they're talking about universal health care, or, you know, how they're going to deal with health care in this country because everyone deserves to have health coverage. However, no one is really talking about the food we eat. And there's a great opinion piece from the New York Times that I put a link on my website about our food is killing too many of us. And we really need to stop and take a step back and take a look at why Americans are so sick. We don't want to look at it, but the reality is 100 million adults, almost half the entire adult population, have diabetes or are pre-diabetic. That's huge. Cardiovascular disease affects about 122 million people and causes about 840,000 deaths a year. That's about 2,300 deaths each day. And 3 in 4 adults are overweight or obese. I mean, we have so many problems in the food we eat. And poor diet is the leading cause of mortality in the United States. And the cost of these illnesses that are food-related and preventable costs trillions of dollars a year. And so if we try to change the conversation and start talking to the people about what we eat, and at the same time give subsidies to those farmers that are growing food in a healthy way that is also good for the climate and is sequestering carbon from the atmosphere, as opposed to putting toxic chemicals into the ground and polluting our waterways and creating dead zones and all this stuff. I mean, our food system is such a mess, and it's connected to our health, our environment, our economy, to climate change, to everything. So we really need to take a step back, and even though it seems like Marianne Williamson is not a real viable candidate, what she was saying in the last debate was really right on. She was the one that was talking about connecting the dots about how everything is connected. And it starts with our food and our health and what we do at home. And we really have to all take a step back and look at that, because we have the power to make a difference, but we really have to take a look at that. Also, I wrote about fracking. I mean, New York State has banned fracking, but we're still supporting building the infrastructure for fracking, like this Williams pipeline that I've been protesting and writing about. Why are we still building pipelines to carry polluted fracked gas into our area when we don't need it? It's all for export. It's not like we need it. And why aren't we moving forward more and building more of those windmills? I know Cuomo approved one windmill project, but we should have windmills everywhere. We should all be going solar. We really need to switch things around and, you know, turn our economy towards a renewable economy. And it can be done. Many countries are doing a much better job at it than us. So we need to look at other examples around the world and really push our candidates and think about who we are going to be voting for and all getting out and vote. I know we still have time, but we really need to really pull together in this next year so that we can keep our country a democracy, because it's heading in the wrong direction right now. Ways that you can take action, I want to share with you that Community Solidarity, which is a local organization here on Long Island, they have food shares in 7 different locations on the island where they collect food from restaurants and stores, mostly stores, that are almost expiring, and we all know that those expiration dates don't really mean very much for most things anyway. But they collect all this beautiful food and flowers, and a lot of it is organic. It's all vegan. unless, you know, if Trader Joe's or Whole Foods has milk or yogurt that they're giving away, they will hand that out too. But most of the food is fresh, plant-based food, and they give it away for free. Well, they are also doing a huge school backpack drive. It's back to school time, and you know, there's so many families on the island that don't have food. Well, there's also so many families that can't afford to get their kids the school items that they need. So lots of organizations are having school drives right now. Think about donating. It would be really, really great. So there's a link on my website for Community Solidarity. The River Fund, which is the nonprofit food pantry that I partner with for Thanksgiving and Christmas, they have a back-to-school drive as well. I stopped in my local health food store. They have a big thing in the front for a school drive. So think about donating to some kids who need a little hand with their families this season as we all get ready for going back to school. So some things that are going on in and around the city that you may want to participate, I just want to tell you about. My guest from a couple of weeks ago, the Schneiders, Stefan and Rachel Schneider from Hawthorne Valley Farm, they are having their Soil Saturdays. The first one is coming up this Saturday at the Hawthorne Valley Organic Farm in Ghent, New York, and they're free. Donations are welcome, but they're free. There's one this Saturday, and there's one the next couple Saturdays. So check that out. If you've never gone to their farm, it's really, really beautiful, and it's across from the Hawthorne Valley Waldorf School. So every Waldorf student in the fourth grade gets a cow. Can you imagine that? They get their own cow to take care of for the whole year. I love that. September 8th is the 13th annual North Fork Foodie Tour on Long Island. That's a wonderful self-guided tour of a lot of the North Fork foodie farms and local producers. Over 20 locations are included in that tour, so check that out. By the way, all these links are on my website. You can find links to all of these things. The 5th Annual Food Lab is coming up September 13th and 14th. Lydia Bastinich is the keynote speaker. It's all about food and health, and it's at Stony Brook University Southampton campus, and it's Friday starting at 6:30 p.m. and all day Saturday, so check that out. Also on September 14th, Orchestai Farm, which is a wonderful local CSA farm that works with young people on the autistic spectrum, they are having their Harvest Moon evening. It's an evening of expressive agriculture. And that's actually not that much in the evening. It's from 4:30 to 7:30, taking advantage of the light. And tickets are $100 and up. So check that out. September 26th is the Coalition for Healthy School Foods annual gala. That takes place at the Academy of Medicine. I will be there with a food booth, serving up some delicious vegan food. But it's an amazing evening. And this year, usually they have music. This year they're having a comedy night, so it should be really fun. There's some early bird tickets still available, so check that out. Talking about early bird tickets, I also want to just mention that Food Tank is having their New York City Summit and Gala dinner. And even though it's far off, it's not until November 1st and 2nd, the early bird tickets are going fast. They had one release that already sold out, a second release that sold out. They're on their third release of early bird tickets. So if you are interested in Food Tank Summit, they have over 80 speakers, and then there's a huge gala in the evening with, you know, that's a separate ticket price. So check that out. Also coming back to conferences on September 26th through the 29th. I know this is up in Traverse City, Michigan, which is quite a schlep from New York, and you know, unless you're in the area, it's a schlep from anywhere, but it might be worth it because this is Farms, Food, and Health Conference. And one of the reasons that this really struck a chord for me is because, as I was just talking about food, this one is really talking about food and how food is medicine and what we can do to really change our diets and get the American people changing their diets. So that should be a great, great conference. Also, I guess that's it. just check out my website if you're interested in events coming up. If you have an event that you would like me to share, please feel free to let me know about that. And now, lastly, I want to share with you my recipe before Chung Hua Hung comes on. This recipe is, guess, cucumber salad, cucumber and mint salad. So many of us have so many cucumbers coming out of our garden right now, and what do we do with them? Right now in my home, it's just my husband and I, so I only used one cucumber for this, but feel free to multiply it and multiply it if you have lots of cucumbers and lots of company coming over. It will be a great one, and I'll be making it this weekend for Labor Day, a big batch. So could serve four as a side dish. We ate it one night and had enough for a second meal. So I used 1 tablespoon of a mild oil. You could use safflower, canola, sunflower. If you use canola, make sure it's a GMO-free canola oil, because canola is one of the most genetically modified crops that we produce. 2 tablespoons of rice vinegar, 1 teaspoon of agave, a pinch of sea salt, 1/2 red onion cut in lengthwise and then sliced paper thin. And then you're going to put that red onion into that mixture of the oil, the vinegar, the agave, and the sea salt, and let that marinate for about an hour. You just want to give that a head start over the cucumbers, because by marinating the onion, it changes the onion completely, so it's no longer a really pungent onion, but a really sweet, delicious pickled onion. So then the rest of the recipe is you need 1 cucumber. Now, I like to peel my cucumbers, not completely, but like every other peel, so that the cucumber has thin slices of skin still on it. And then I take a fork and I score the cucumber. I hold the cucumber, I kind of stand it up on its end, and I use a fork and I slide down the cucumber with the fork. So I'm scoring it, so I'm getting little prongs in the edges of the cucumber, so that when I cut it, it looks like it's a decoration all along the edges, and it's really pretty that way. So I cut the cucumber first lengthwise down the center, and then I cut it into half rounds with that decoration of the fork all around it. It's very pretty. Then I added the cucumbers to the marinated onions. I also used mint leaves. I used just about 1 tablespoon of mint leaves. It was 2 branches of mint leaves from my plant outside, and I took the leaves off, and after I chopped it, it was about a heaping tablespoon's worth of chopped mint leaves. I put that in. I added 1 more teaspoon of honey just to make it a little sweeter. You could use another teaspoon of agave, but I used honey. 1/4 cup of slivered toasted almonds, and I had this really special balsamic vinegar. It's a lemon balsamic vinegar that's delicious. But you can use any balsamic vinegar that you like. I would use a white balsamic, though, as opposed to a dark one, so that the cucumbers don't get discolored. And that's it. I mix it all up. You can let it sit 10 minutes, and that's it. Super easy and really delicious. And feel free, if you want, instead of mint leaves, if you want to change the flavor, you can put in dill and have it more Mediterranean. You can put in cilantro and have it more Mexican or Indian. So there, you can play with it and give it a different spin. But it was really, really delicious. And now it's my pleasure to introduce to all of you Chung Hua Hung. She is the Executive Director of Grassroots International. And Grassroots International is a global justice advocacy and grant making organization, and they connect progressive donors in the U.S. to high-impact social movements in the Global South. And for over 25 years, Chung Hua has worked on a range of social justice issues, both locally and internationally, through organizing, policy, and advocacy, building coalitions, and philanthropy work. She was named by New York Magazine as one of the most influential people in politics. And she helped to build the political clout of New York State's immigrant communities through comprehensive civic engagement programs, and helped to win numerous legal, social, and economic rights and benefits for those communities. Chung Hua's past activism includes working on health care, worker rights, and human rights issues at the New York Immigration Coalition, the Campaign to Save Public Hospitals, the National Korean American Service and Education Consortium, the Asian Pacific American Labor Alliance, and the Korea Information Project. I would say she's a power woman, and I'm so thrilled to have her. Chung-Hwa, are you with me?
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Sure, thank you for joining us. So I thought before we get into your actual work, Grassroots International, and what you're doing there, I thought you maybe could share with us a little bit of your personal history. How did you get involved in this? Did you grow up here? What is your background?
First of all, I've done, I'm an immigrant from Korea. I came when I was in fifth grade, 11 years old, so started learning English and adjusting to everything that's new here in the 70s. And then I grew up in a very political family. My parents were both activists, and so started to learn about human rights issues in Korea from a very young age. And after I graduated from college, just got involved in those issues, first around Korea and human rights issues and all the issues related to U.S. intervention in Korea in the 80s, and did a lot of solidarity work with other communities. And then I wanted to work on something more local, so got involved in immigrant rights issues and was privileged to work at the New York Immigration Coalition, which continues to do amazing work for immigrant rights. And then I wanted to circle back to international work because whether it's immigration issues or food justice issues, if you start to look at the root causes of all the biggest issues that we're grappling with, you really can't get at the solutions unless you have a global perspective. And so that's where I landed at Grassroots International, where we can actually be in direct touch and with and directly support social movements who are leading the way. So that's where I am.
Great. Great. Thank you for that. And in terms of solidarity philanthropy or progressive funder, can you explain to us how you connect people who want to give to Grassroots International and what that means?
Yeah. You know, so at Grassroots, as you mentioned, we fundraise in the U.S. and we give grants to social movements in the Global South. And as we did that, we realized, gosh, philanthropy is a funny sector in that the money that philanthropy has comes from the very system that creates the problems we're trying to solve. So unless we're very intentional about the limits of and practices of philanthropy, we actually end up reproducing and perpetuating the kind of inequalities in wealth and power. So so we coined a term called solidarity philanthropy with the intention that we got to do this differently. Like it's and we have to do philanthropy in a way that it's not just a simple redistribution exercise. Take, you know, money from those who have and give a little more to those who don't. That is part of it. But our vision is really to turn philanthropy upside down. We are calling it solidarity philanthropy because I think that situates philanthropy differently in its relationship to movement, as opposed to charity, which is your kind of handout to people in need, so to speak. Or often a lot of big foundations will come up with their own solution and then go on to curate nonprofits to implement the foundation's vision. But we're saying, well, we're not going to do it that way. We're actually going to be humble and recognize the leadership of frontline communities that are organized into movements, and we're going to provide various forms of support, including financial and through our own actions, taking social action, to the social movements that are making systemic change. And so it's an idea that solidarity philanthropy is something we're trying to popularize and something we're trying to put into practice as a more equitable way of relating to social movements as funders.
Mm-hmm. I have another question because I still don't understand. If you're still taking money, and believe me, as someone who works with nonprofits, I get the challenge. I mean, you know, so often, you know, we're running food conferences and,
That's right.
And agricultural conferences, and, you know, we have Miracle-Gro willing to give us money, and we don't want to take money from Miracle-Gro because they're, you know, putting the chemicals into the ground that we're trying to fight against. So it's, you know, mm-hmm. and that's just one small example. So mm-hmm. how do you grapple with that when you have the people of wealth who have gotten their money through the benefit of oil, gas, biotech, technology, whatever source it is that very often is contributing to the problem? How do you clean mm-hmm. that money up so that you don't feel like you're taking from the polluters to try to, you know, or the people that are causing the problems in the global south, and mm-hmm. then use it to try to do social movements down there? Do you ever say, I'm not taking your money?
Yeah, I mean, we obviously don't take money from kind of blatantly, you know, kind of destructive corporations like any of the fossil fuel companies or, you know, even foundations like Gates Foundation or, you know, other funders who promote
GMOs,
the green revolution, or GMOs,
right.
And you know, of course. So there's many, many corporations who are, like you said, part of the problem. So we don't have any corporate backers at this point. Anyway, no. So we rely a lot on individuals and foundations who see us as a vehicle to really support social movements that they might not have connection to. So, you know, it's not, there's no pure money. We know that, but mm-hmm. what we try to do is when we work with donors, instead of just seeing them as donors, we try to educate them about the work of social movements and the part about our responsibility as consumers and people with relatively more wealth in the U.S. So that we're at least supporting the right kinds of things on the grassroots level. But, you know, it's kind of like organizing work. Organizing donors and donor activists is an important part of bringing kind of social change mindset to philanthropy right now. So mm-hmm. it's, part of it is not taking, you know, corporate money, but the other part is working with individuals so that we're actually supporting, you know, radical movements mm-hmm. as opposed to people who are just kind of working within the system.
Right. Well, that's good to hear. so can you share with us some of the movements and projects that Grassroots working on right now that that you feel really optimistic about?
Yeah, so as you can imagine, our grantee partners are going through very tough times. There is a rise in right-wing populism and authoritarian governments all over the world. And the corporate assault is getting worse and worse, which makes our social movement partners' work even more important. So a lot of our partners' work are both, you know, active resistance work, you know, responding to repression, and at the same time creating alternative work. So, you know, stop the bad, create the good. So our one of the prime examples, since you're a food justice leader and your listeners are probably food justice advocates, one of our big focus areas is food sovereignty, and we partner with amazing farmer and peasant organizations to do that work. So one of the international network of peasant movements is called La Vía Campesina, and they're the ones who coined the phrase, small farmers cool the planet. So, you know, everybody's looking for solutions to the climate crisis, and we say, well, small farmers cool the planet. Small farmers are a huge part of the solution because they practice organic and agro, what we call agroecology. And what that means is that they not only grow pesticide-free, healthy food, they take care of the earth, they put carbon back into the soil. So their farming has a dual, I would say triple benefit of producing healthy food, serving as a carbon sink, and third, creating vibrant democracies by working together with other small farmers and having a food system that's controlled by small farmers as opposed to industrial agriculture that is destroying the earth and poisoning the food and making small farmers into basically slave labor-like farm workers. So small farmers and agroecology and food sovereignty is a source of a lot of hope for us. And I hope that the farmers in the Global South get to connect more and more with food justice activists in the U.S.
Mm-hmm. That's great. You know, so often, you know, people with good intentions, you know, want to organize something that they think is needed somewhere in the world, and they come in with these great ideas of how they're going to change and fix a broken system. But one of the things mm-hmm. I love what you're doing is you really kind of go in and, you know, and work with the people that are already there on the ground, doing the work and are supporting them, so that instead of top down, it's coming from the ground up. And I think
that
adds so much to your success.
That's right. There's a lot of indigenous knowledge that is very scientific. You know, there is an amazing diversity of Creole native seeds that small farmers are preserving and that are actually climate resistant and one of the best protections, you know, against kind of GMO seeds. So a lot of that work is going on. They just need to be supported and promoted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what about when it comes to water and drought resistance and irrigation? How are you working with communities that are challenged with water shortages?
Yeah, that's a huge challenge because, you know, if you work on land, of course, water is part of it, and then seeds and food is part of it. So that is our world, land and territory, water and food and seeds. And so a lot of our groups that we support have community-based projects that are a combination of doing climate resistant, practicing climate resistant farming, agriculture, and then they also have gray water management systems that conserve water, reuse water, rainwater catchment systems. They have innovative irrigation systems. These are all kind of very locally based projects. Unfortunately, what they have to grapple with is, you know, big, you know, I was in Brazil recently, and what we saw was there's a huge a paper company who grabbed land from a bunch of farmers and started growing eucalyptus trees, monocrop, like all over this entire area where small farmers used to live. And the trees ended up sucking water out of the aquifers for this paper company, and all the agriculture was destroyed. Or you would have in Honduras, we have hydroelectric dam companies who build these dams to provide water for mines, right? Or just huge hydroelectric dams, and they not only destroy the river, they end up poisoning the river, and that destroys the agricultural crops around the area. So for indigenous people, it's destroying a source of not only water, but of their spiritual ancestry. And I think some of your listeners might know about Berta Cáceres, who was an indigenous feminist leader in Honduras, was fighting against a huge hydroelectric dam because the entire community depended on the river for so many things. And she was assassinated by the corporate interests colluding with dictator government. And unfortunately, that's what we see more and more, that a lot of people think some of these issues have a technical solution, but actually, we don't need to invent technical solutions. Let's go to the people closest to the rivers, closest to the soil, farmers and indigenous people, and see how their water plan and, climate and agricultural plan is, and support that because they know how to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. On that note, let's take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, I'd love to hear some other ways that Grassroots is funding some of the farmers and agricultural projects around. So Everyone listening, don't go anywhere. I'm talking with Chunghwa Hung, the Executive Director of Grassroots International, and I'm Bhavani at IE Green. Be right back. Thank you.
Founder of the Progressive Radio Network. Today we have more than 80 producers bringing forth the most progressive and most liberating information, the kind of information you do not regularly hear on any of the mainstream or alternative media. You can help us now. Up to this point, I have virtually supported the Progressive Radio Network, all of its expenses and payroll, myself. But we would like to expand our reach. We'd like to do far more. We'd like to be able to advertise on Facebook and let others know we exist. We are the number one progressive radio network in the world. In fact, we have programs that are most listened to in all of progressive radio. But we could go a lot further. Our message could reach a lot more people, especially at a time when people are desperate for honest, objective insights on the important topical issues of our day. How can you help? It's simple. Go to prn.fm, go to our main page. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a little button, Support Now. And then whatever you can contribute on a monthly basis will make a big difference. It will help get the message out. It will help inform more people, give them more choices. This is where you'll hear in the independent candidates and the people looking to challenge the corruption in government and industries. But we need to get our reach out further. So please, whatever you can afford on a monthly basis, and there's some suggestions there, and it'll be automatic. All right, thank you very much for continuing to help us help you and the rest of the world on these important issues.
Progressive Radio Network. The Thinking Person Station.
Kayamaniya.
everyone, and welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani and I.E. Green on the Progressive Radio Network. If you're just joining us, I'm talking with Chung Hua Hung. She is the Executive Director of Grassroots International, and we're talking about the work they do, helping raise money and fundraise in the U.S. and sending that money to the Global South, where there's so many projects that need work. And Chung Hua, one of the things that I'm really interested in is, how do you choose which projects to help? There are so many unfortunate situations that need assistance. How do you pick?
Well, we've been doing this work for 36 years now, and we have a model called a long-term partnership with the movement partners. So we don't just fund a group for a couple of years and move on. So we are partnering with movements that have been doing this work for a long time with a long-term vision and with a clear analysis of what constituencies need to be organized to change the political context and to change the food system, to change agricultural policies. And so we start off with really good partners, and we get guidance from them. We do have a focus area, like I said, of land and territory, water, food, and seeds. And so, you know, we ask, who are the people most affected, right, and threatened when it comes to land rights and food and so on. And so that led us to organized peasant communities and indigenous communities. They were the frontline communities. So a lot of the movements that we support, you know, fit into that description. They're fighting for, they're on the forefront. So, you know, often we say, fund the fighters, fund the solutions. And the fighters are the ones who have the solutions, which is not a coincidence. Instead of funding individual projects, like, you know, let's dig a well here and let's do a garden here, we fund social movements that have a power analysis, that have a strategy to really change the system. So, and within that, of course, we would love to raise more money to fund more of those groups, but we do fund kind of a combination of local groups who then are part of national or regional movements who work as part of global networks. Because we're trying to fund movement just beyond projects and organizations.
Mm-hmm. And so are you involved at all in the movements of, I guess, child labor when it comes to cocoa or coffee or also, you know, I just saw the trailer to Ghost Fleet. Have you seen that yet? John Bauer,
no.
Film on the slave labor in the fishing industry. I was horrified. You see it, it's just unbelievable. So, you know, you don't think of, you know, everyone wants wild fish, and you think it's just because the farm raised is bad, but then you also, when you see this other side, you realize that the slave labor involved in farming fish, I mean, or in catching fish is horrendous. So
that's right, yeah. That's right. No,
talk
we don't specifically
that.
Have an anti-slavery or child labor a funding program right now. But, you know, we fund in Brazil, and, you know, some of the groups that we fund are working against slavery and slavery-like conditions there and helping with that situation. But, I think it's a systemic issue. You know, if you have an economic system, you know, where big corporations are trying to extract the most amount of labor from people for the lowest amount of wages, regardless of gender, age, background, that is is what is going to happen. And so I think it's very much related to overall exploitation of people and the planet.
And I think that's the history of agriculture for eons, from the very beginning of time, right? They want to get the most work out of people for the least amount of money or no money at all.
That's right. And that's where we have the alternatives. We're supporting groups like the Manless Workers Movement, where, you know, they decided to not accept that model. So what the Landless Workers do, they're known as MST, they organize a bunch of peasant families, and they go occupy land. And they just occupy that land and start farming that land, and through struggles, they win collective title to that land, and they start, you know, they practice agroecology and direct democracy in those areas. We see that with indigenous people. They have collective land titles and municipal lawmaking, and just really, I think, promoting agriculture in a communal way that is staying true to a different, radically different philosophy. And I want to bring up the idea of Gwen Vivier here, which, are you familiar with that?
No, can you say it again?
Yeah, one of the most inspiring things that I learned on the job is this idea of buen vivir, which is, there's not an exact translation for it, but it roughly translates into living well, which is a philosophy that you don't need to constantly grow and make more profit and produce more. Human beings are here to live well, to be in a harmonious relationship with each other and with the land. And so it's actually a pretty profound anti-capitalist philosophy, right? And we find this in different forms from indigenous cosmovision. You take what you need and you practice reciprocity, and you protect the land and water, and we are just small beings within that. So, and that translates into the practices of agriculture. And then in the case of the idea of food sovereignty, it's more politicized because of the kind of historic, you know, colonization and industrial kind of corporate dominance in the agricultural sector. So when peasants talk about food sovereignty, right, they're not just talking about, oh, we want our equal share of food, or they're not talking about food security, because somebody who's in jail theoretically has food security, and that you know that you're going to have some food on the table. But that's not what the peasants are fighting for. They're fighting for a new food system where they get to choose how to grow their food, what to grow, how to distribute it, and change the whole system. So those are some of the inspiring ideas and movements that are coming out of the Global South, from peasant movements, from indigenous communities that we need to learn from. A lot of our groups are also talking about the feminist economy. You know, there's an amazing, because of the spike in misogyny and femicide, you know, a lot of the resistance in the Global South is led by women, you know, in a lot of the rural areas in West Africa. Most of the farmers are women, and they are coming together to practice a different kind of agriculture that's more feminist, that values families and gender justice, and not just the amount of production and profit.
Leave it to women. We just got to get rid
of
the men.
That's right.
How do we do that?
And in Puerto Rico, I mean, every country, there's like a different, unique fitness, but just amazing movement leadership. Like in Puerto Rico, you know, there's of course a strong food sovereignty movement there, but together with these places called community kitchens, comedores sociales, and their slogan is we don't eat austerity, we cook dignity. And they have a model of bringing the community together after Hurricane Maria, not just to provide food, but just create community around food and talking about how to grow healthy food and how to share food and not wait for, the government to come through with, you know, packets of food, because that was not happening. So, you know, connecting food justice and a community building with the political idea of decolonization and specifically challenging austerity measures. That's how we see kind of specific local movements developing their own vision according to the situation that they're in. So we're also looking for more supporters for that work in Puerto Rico.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, you talk about community kitchens, and even though we have a huge amount of food in this country, there's been so much talk recently about loneliness and people eating alone and mm-hmm. lack of community in our society. I mean, we've become so computer-oriented and people are communicating through computer, and that's just not the same as sitting down at a table with people. And, isolation. I mean, there was an article recently that just talked about, you know, isolation is killing more people than cancer. I mean, loneliness, you know, the elderly, you know, those that live in communities that they live to old ages are communities that have community. You know, it's not
That's
in
right.
isolation that you live to over 100. It's because you have the village. You know, you have everybody together. You have the old and the young and, you know, and you're building community. And,
That's right, and we have a real crisis in democracy because we are not providing avenues for meaningful community building and meaningful input around, you know, decision making around what's happening in the community, where the resources get, you know, put. You know, a lot of the isolation is not a personal challenge. It's the community and it's the government, it's our democracy that has failed to provide these public spaces and community building opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that extends to global connections. A lot of us in the U.S. are taught only to, like, think about what's in front of us, you know. And I just can't tell you how empowering it is to form community with Global South movements and communities. They might be physically far away, but in terms of our values and how we can work together, there is no other way. We have to connect up with our brothers and sisters in the Global South who are often suffering from the corporations that emerge out of the United States and
right.
Backed by our government. So, you know, I think it's all related.
Yeah, well, we're very good at exploiting those
mm-hmm.
that don't have. I mean, that's just, you know, part of the American way from our founding fathers. And that's been more in the conversation, too, thank God, you know, and we need to really come to terms with that. But what do you say to people who say, you know, we have so many problems here in this country, why give money to projects in other countries when we have people hungry right here in the United States?
Yeah, and I say the answer is we got to do both, you know, like no one deserves to be hungry, no matter where you live, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I think everyone should do both, and you know, it's part of our responsibility to take action locally, but also articulate how we are linked and we affect the global community. I think that goes hand in hand, and I think it's, you know, part of our political consciousness raising that we need to do. I can't remember a bite of any food that I have eaten that doesn't have some sort of a global connection, right? So the problem of transnational corporations or companies like Monsanto and Cargill are operating at a global level. So if we're going to be challenging them, you know, seriously, we also need to build a global network based on solidarity and shared resources, shared values.
I think you're so right. And there's, you know, and every organization can't do everything. That's the thing that I always come to. You know, we all have to somewhat specialize and focus and, you know, just hope that there's other organizations, as we know there are, that will take up some of the more local problems. But the work that Grassroots International is doing is just phenomenal. Can you share we're almost out of time, but maybe just share with us one more project that you're working on that you're really inspired by.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I mentioned several that I'm very inspired by. Oh, it's like everything we support, I'm very inspired by. But let me think, you know, I think, I want to go back to, a community in Honduras that we support called the Garifuna community. They are Afro-Indigenous community in Honduras, trying to protect their land and their rivers from large corporations and also narco trafficker criminal networks and from repression from government. And so they're hit with the government repression, corporate abuse, and criminal attacks, criminal gang attacks. And in the face of those challenges, you know, I went to visit them in Honduras. They have built an amazing spiritual resistance visionary community with Afro-descendant people just connected to their land. And Miriam Miranda is one of the leaders there. She is one of my inspirations. Such a strong force. And when I see groups like that putting their lives on the line, like knowing what they're up against, and saying that we will not be evicted out of our ancestral land, no matter what the attacks are. I mean, to me, that's really inspiring. And they're doing that not just out of self-interest. They're doing it out of the deep respect and love of Mother Nature and the deep respect of the Afro-descendant ancestry and the spiritual legacy that we need to protect.
Right.
And she's not afraid to speak out against the U.S. government and the Honduran government.
Which is amazing, especially in light of, as you said, the activist that was assassinated, you know, not just, what was that, 2 years ago, right?
Recently. Yeah. And Medium.
Yeah, I met her. She came up to Queens. Brooklyn.
Yes.
She was at Nancy's house. Yeah.
Yes. So the two groups are working together. And just last week, we had to do an action alert because she was sending us real-time text messages saying, we have two vans full of armed men trying to shoot at our village members. And the amount of militarization that's happened in Honduras so that everybody just buys private security armed people, and they just go in the dead of night and start killing people. And it is just...
horrendous.
You know, there's no protection. We were getting live recordings. And I want to make the point, one of the things that they were saying is, we want to stay on our land, but some of our members have no choice but to flee to the U.S. because we are being targeted we're right. being shot at, literally. And so,
right. And then you have a president then, like ours who won't let anybody in. It's
yeah, and then we wonder, why are they coming? Well, let me tell you why they're coming. Yeah.
What's that?
No. So I wanted to link it to the migration issue, too. So food,
yeah,
migration, human rights. It's
so
all
I will
related.
Send that to me. I will share it on my website and share all this information with everybody. And I will share your contact information. But thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for your work, Bhavani. Thank you.
Thank you, Changhua. And everybody out there listening, have a great holiday weekend. This is the end of the summer. I can't believe it. Happy Labor Day. And I'll see you all again next week. Bye for now.